Fucking power was out last night. It was so depressing. All my VMs were off. Couldn't process any data. It was bullshit.
Dude, talk about idle. Jesus Christ. That is awful.
Yeah, that's not true.
Welcome to the Point Forward Podcast. Drop the
beat. Hello and welcome to the Point Forward Podcast, episode number 18, Stop Chewing on My Electric. Today we're going to talk about Drupal 7, a little bit about motion graphics.
Then we're going to touch on magic numbers and why they're bad in programming. After that, we're going to teach you about the G-spot.
Codex. And then finally, we have an Asus SSD upgrade and how to boot an ISO from your USB thumb drive. So, let's get the show started.
Woo-hoo.
Yes. Great.
Oh, shenanigans.
Welcome to the Port Forward Podcast, episode number 18. Today is November 28th, 2011. Got Ben and Merrick with me. How's it going, guys?
What's up, guys?
Hello.
So, we are coming back to you guys pretty quickly. At least we're recording quickly. We'll see when the show ends up getting edited, because we have, you know, I have some personal stuff going on, like things that take time and stuff
to do. That time of the month, that happens once a month, right? So
I think it does, but if we can get the two-week cycle to offset from the one-month cycle, then we'll get it straight.
Apparently, if our cycles aren't synced up yet, maybe we're not hanging out enough. I don't know what that means.
I think we need to hang out some more. So, I guess we have a couple things to talk about this week. I don't know if you guys have anything specific you want to get started with, Sam. Like, you had put some stuff in here about, I don't know, some stuff from our proposed topics, Sam?
Yeah. But I'm kind of interested in your EPC, though.
Since, all right, hold on. We're getting a little excited. Yeah. What about, don't we have some comments on our last show, too, that we want to hit real quick, maybe, possibly, if we click on that? Neil, our favorite fan in the world. Not only does he come with the epic comments and feedback, but 9 out of 10 times, extremely useful information, too. So he was happy we recorded and posted a show, as with a few other listeners, I'm sure, and commented on the Sub-Zero coding, and then he mentioned a side channel with ATM machines where thermal imaging cameras can pick up your fingerprints.
Let's talk about that in a second. Finish his comment, then we'll switch to that.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Cool. All right, so we'll hit his side channel and ATMs, and then blah, 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 side channel, something else he talks about, RFID tag readers, normal network cable. So that's, a side channel for... Say you pull the RFID reader off a building, you hit the cable, there's a side channel there. Dedicated subnet monitoring devices, security cameras. So that's interesting to think about and contemplate, also in his comment. And then he mentions RAM clouds, because we talked about that in the last show. And airplane reference. Boring noises coming out of Merrick's mouth.
Oh, he said we should have added a link to sendnow.com. Which is Sam's awesome startup. I think we might have missed a link in the show notes to that, apparently. I'm sorry about that.
Hey, you can't win them all, but thank you very much, Neil, for signing up.
No, that's definitely a good idea, because I assume, since like Sam's putting effort into this, it's a real service. I still haven't got my invite yet, so I'm going to call it Vaporware at this point.
Nice.
But who knows, right?
Well, I would know, wouldn't I?
Nice. And also, finally, he says he's adding the term network architect to his
Hells, yes, he is.
His CV,
cool.
Which I think means curriculum vitae, or aka resume.
Yeah.
It does.
I think that's what that all...
That's like high speech and stuff.
Yeah, I think it's those British... I think that their speech is higher than ours in some...
Sometimes it happens,
sometimes,
and other times...
Yeah.
We're cool, too.
So, the first thing that we had put a sidebar, but now we'll talk about it, is this thermal imaging... side channel. Basically, this is an article over on Wired.com. It says thermal imaging camera can read your ATM pin. So basically, the deal is that thieves can sometimes they can rig ATMs so they can steal this card swipe. Like I've seen some thieves put they'll put an additional card reader. So when you slide your card into the ATM, it reads the thief's card reader reads it, and then the ATM reads it. So they basically just picked it up as it was going into the machine.
There's a name for that, skimming or something like that.
Yeah,
what is that called?
Something like that. But that doesn't give them the PIN number, since they're not controlling the ATM. They're just controlling a little plastic thing that's tacked on the outside. So another thing that they classically do is they'll put a camera
in
to
a vehicle
read your
in
fingers.
The parking lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes they just will attach a camera on the side, or sometimes the little card skimmer will have a camera on it pointing at the keys.
Interesting.
But the problem with that is that a lot of people cover, like I cover up my pin with my hands whenever I punch it in, because I know about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But this is now, if you use a thermal imaging camera, the heat, just the very brief seconds that you're touching the keys, heats them up, and then they can see which buttons were pressed by your fingers.
So as in you hit your pin,
you're covering
conduct
it
your
you
transaction,
your
and once you leave the keypad, these keys are still glowing on IR feed.
Right.
Yep.
Isn't that so crazy?
It's definitely nuts. The article does go on to mention that if your ATM uses metal keys, this is not a valid attack, so good news for all those heavy-duty ATMs out there. But
I think Bank of America uses metal ones, and I'm not sure
yeah,
who
my
else.
Chase does too, where I usually go, but the plastic keys this article's referencing is on those cheaper ATMs you'll see posted up
gas
in
stations
like,
and like
supermarkets, yeah, gas stations and bars, pretty much all the places where you're most likely going to get your information stolen from. So, good news.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they'd be doing this on the side of a bank, an ATM at the bank location, but if you're at some shady bar, it's a much
totally.
Better place to run this. And the other cool part is that since the heat dissipates with time, they can also tell the order, not only which keys, but also the order you press the keys in.
Right.
So,
so they
my
wouldn't
defense
even have,
strategy
yeah.
for this attack
yeah.
is to spend all your money and have no money in your bank accounts. That way, regardless... you know, how they get your information, you know, they can't steal any money from you if you don't have any, so that's Merrick's defense against this, and many other financial side channel attacks.
In fact, every financial attack you could think of, Merrick, you just solved
pretty much.
Us.
Steal your identity? Don't worry about it. You've got no credit. That's funny.
But in all seriousness, though, if you were concerned about this and you were on a plastic ATM, an ATM with a plastic keypad, you could just touch all the keys, or after you leave, you know, put your palm, just rest your palm on it as you do your transaction or whatever, and that would heat up enough of the keys for where they wouldn't have any more information than they, you know, than just whatever. Also,
exactly.
I don't really have any good images for this,
I like
but I was
it.
Watching
that's,
something
that's
on
a,
TV
slightly more realistic
about those skimmers.
And financially solvent
yeah.
defense.
Exactly, the skimmers, and basically they look like if the ATM is gray, it might be like a black plastic add-on. If you just kind of like grab your fingers around the card slot and shake it a little bit, you might be able to dislodge it, because you know you don't know what it's going to look like, right? So if you can see it's just one piece of plastic or steel or whatever, then there's not really a card skimmer. But if it's like a detachable thing, then you should, I don't know, call the authorities or something. I don't know what you do, but...
What's funny is on the outside of my... Chase ATM is what looks like a skimmer, but
yeah.
it's big and green and lights up, and I've definitely yanked on it before and it never comes out, so hopefully that's the Chase
that's
fixture. But granted, I'm also using the no money defense, so I'm doubly protecting myself, physical security and no money in my account. Good news for me. So, I mean, I guess it's been about 2 weeks since we recorded, and we talked on the last show about some achievements we were out to get done, and I was wondering if you guys had an update on that.
I certainly do. Do you want to start first, since you've been doing all that stuff with Drupal and pretty busy?
I wish
right?
I will start it off. It won't take that long, but I'll start it off. I've been... waist deep would be the politically correct version of what I was about to say in Drupal 7, and it's an interesting little bit of a content management system, or as some people refer to it, content management framework. It doesn't strictly follow the model view controller paradigm. In fact, by strictly, I mean not really even at all. A little bit. But it does use a kind of, not to say that anything that doesn't follow that is bad, it's just this is a different approach. And how Drupal 7 is supposed to be used, and how I'm currently developing for it may or may not be completely aligning, but I'm in between books and, you know, resources to find out.
Anyone to mentor you on what the best way to use Drupal 7 is, or are you kind of on your own?
Kinda. The guy I'm working with knows 5 and 6 a little better, and some stuff changed around in 7, which is not to say he's not aware how Drupal works. He's just not like a Drupal pro. Mm-hmm. And part of that stuff aside, part of what we're working with is a rather large existing website with a ton of different crap posted in it, everything from blog posts and reviews to the marketing channels within this website that they're selling different stuff in, and how this Drupal 5 site was put together. It was like piecemeal over time by different developers and companies, so a bunch of shit got hacked together, and in the beginning it worked, but now it's just bad news. There's enough technical debt where if you go in to change anything, it's just instant nightmare. So
that's a good term. I like that term, everybody in podcast land, technical debt. Basically what Merrick says is that if you're taking shortcuts and doing things the easy way, you know, just so you can get something done today, you're kind of taking a debt, because in the future when you come back to modify that source code, you now have to figure out what crazy hack you did as opposed to implementing it cleanly.
You're reverse engineering yourself.
Not, you know, right now. What, Sam?
So you're reverse engineering yourself.
Yeah, and that happens a lot. Technical debt is something that's really hard to get around, but it's something with experience. And you know, this isn't something they don't really teach you in schools. They don't teach you how to write software so it's well-maintainable and things like that. So when you are trying to hire someone and you are looking for someone with experience, really you're looking for someone who knows how to write maintainable code.
That is definitely a good thing to have on the resume.
How do you check? How do you check for that in like interviews? You ask them for. I mean, do you check for?
Well, you could ask them about MVC, or if you ask them about like which is a model view controller, which is a way of separating the view code, the model code, and then the controller code. Merrick, you probably know better about that than I do.
Well, question and answer would be part of it, but also if you were going to give them a medium to complex code test, you would just be able to see how they wrote it and, you know, how cleanly certain things were to happen. Like, if you go in there and you see a function foo returns bar, and then it goes somewhere else in the program and you can't find what is happening, then that might be a warning to think twice about hiring a developer. But if you go in see clean function names and it reads like a story, you know, it's apparent, like, as soon as you're reading through the code, what's happening. And, you know, there's no, like, major confusions or, you know, like, bad smells, as I believed, what's the name of that? Robert C. Martin, who wrote the excellent book Clean Code, called him. If you're looking through software and you notice bad smells, it's, you know, confusing to you to read, or you see frowned upon programming practices such as a bunch of go-tos littered throughout there.
Or magic numbers and stuff
like that. Yeah, magic numbers. So that's stuff to watch out for. And, you know, if it looks good to you and, you know what good code looks like, then that's a way to tell, you know, if someone knows what they're talking about.
Great.
But unfortunately, refactoring is something that's inevitably going to happen always and forever, which is depressing. But going back into software and trying to make it clean is kind of like a science in and of itself. And sometimes you can rescue software. Other times it's like, all right, rewrite. And that's kind of what we're doing with this crazy website. So we're moving right along, and I'm excited about that.
Is there an update tool from Drupal 6 to 7 for the database? Can you say just update my database?
Well, that's the problem. There was a 5 to 6, and I don't know if there's a 6 to 7 tool, but the customer wanted to go from 5 to 7. So That's part of it too. And 7's like new, which is kind of like a little bit like, you know, all right, well, we have more or less a decent documentation here, and we can, you know, find out what's going on. But at the same time, a 5 to 6 transition would have been much easier because there's already that much out there.
When is 7 released or whatever? When was it released?
I think this year even.
Okay.
Earlier this year without me looking.
Well, and I'm with the distraction depth about magic numbers, but you can finish up if you...
Oh, okay. Well, I think we're moving right along, and the project is slated to be due for Christmas for the clients, so that's good, a little Christmas present for them. And how many long days in December that means for me and my dev buddy at work is to be seen yet, but I'll definitely keep all you out there in podcast land posted on our misadventures with Drupal 7.
Very nice.
I want to know about magic numbers. What were you saying there?
Well, I guess, I don't know, we were talking about, real quick, I mean, but before that, we were doing giving updates of what we were doing, right? So that was Merrick's mm-hmm. update. Sam, or you want to give us your update, what you've been doing over the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, definitely. I began the motion graphics work for the Sanel basic introduction video. Mm. Some of you may not know what motion graphics is, but it's those slick videos that you see in... I can't think of any examples right now. Ben, you and I talked about a few of them.
Merrick, isn't there that one website where they give you a really good, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a website where if you want to get your idea and they'll make a motion graph, they'll make a video for you. I can't remember the website for the life of me, but basically
yeah, I've probably seen it, but nothing's coming to mind right now. But
all right, continue, Sam.
Anyway, so I'm making one from scratch, and it takes kind of a long time to get like a whole second of animation. So I think I'm about... I don't know, maybe 30 seconds or so, 45 seconds, something like that.
What software and like techniques are you using?
I'm using After Effects, but you can use anything. You can even use a 3D program to render it out. As long as you have control over it. The biggest mistake you can make is trying to use some piece of software that maybe has all the features, but you're not really comfortable with it. Then you'll be spending forever trying to get just the basics down. So I'm just using After Effects CS 5.5, which the last time I used After Effects, I think, was using version 7. It's kind of a huge difference between the two. Have you guys used Photoshop in a while since version 7 through
no.
CS 5?
I know that you had that issue. Sam, you updated and they had changed all kinds of stuff and you were freaking out because you couldn't drag layers to new... You couldn't drag a layer to like a new window or something, and it would drag it to under your mouse, not to where it was. So if you had two separate windows with the same pixel size, and you just want to move a layer from one to the other, you'd have to like re-move it XY to get it exactly the same place. Some issues like that.
Yeah, they have like a slicker looking UI that looks really nice, but it makes sort of really other basic things a lot more difficult. So you just have to memorize new little keyboard shortcuts. Like, I think I had to hold down Shift to drag the layer instead of just dragging it over now. Right. So it's like, okay, this is just more things to memorize. But, you know, yeah, it's no big deal. So that video that I'm working on should be done, I want to say, in a month, maybe less, if I can swing it. But it's got to have sound, you know, and explain everything. It's just basically
a
full breakdown.
So are you using, like, CG content or live footage?
No, mostly it's just motion graphics. So
okay,
CG,
for the most,
Merrick.
Computer generated.
Yes,
cool.
I'm not using any 3D components really, other than just the layers themselves. You know, it's just mostly an animated Photoshop looking type thing, mostly stylized.
South Park does that. South Park is made entirely in Maya, but they don't use any of the 3D effects, or they very rarely. Sometimes they'll do a pan around the room, but most of the stuff it's just 2D assets.
Totally.
In Maya.
You can definitely use a 3D piece of software. Just make a new camera, set it to the overhead view, and then you can move everything around there. And then occasionally you can move the camera. It looks pretty strange if you have a whole bunch of layers that you've been stuck in 2D mode. You're moving things around, then you suddenly move the camera. It's a pretty neat effect if you need to do it.
That reminds me, speaking of distraction depth, I saw a cool, and I think you guys saw a similar message, a cool 404 not found on GitHub.
Yeah.
Where you move the mouse around and it's like, you know, 2D, 3D action going on.
Yeah, it's just a couple different layers. It was like GitHub's little like squid octopus thing, and their service was down. It was like, it wasn't a 404 thing, it was like a 500, which means like
no,
server
but that's
error.
The thing. The one I saw was 404. And
okay, yeah,
a...
so the 404 was like Luke, right? With the
lightsaber. Yeah, exactly. With the little speeder. Yeah,
with
yeah,
the
yeah.
little speeder, and then what's... as you move your mouse, it's just like three layers just move kind of like half an inch back and forth on your screen, but it gives the effect that it's like a full 3D whatever thing.
Yeah, no, that was a cool effect, definitely. I mean, it's one of those things that's so simple, and, you know, there's no computational cost, but it adds such, like, a depth to, you know, the user experience. Like, I seriously played with that thing for, like, a whole minute just staring at it. Like,
3D level one.
There's such a cool effect. What the hell is that octopus thing, anyway?
It's their logo, dude. Who cares? It's like asking,
It didn't work in IE. And so when Ben first showed me the link, I said, what the hell is this? The frozen octopus.
Why are you using IE? That's what the hell.
I had it open
so,
for some reason.
Since
some
this
other
is a distraction
depth
from
work.
A distraction depth, we just hit number two on this scale here. So, Sam, why don't you go ahead and tell us about your browsers?
some other shitty website I was using couldn't handle it. But anyway. So, yeah, I had to use Chrome. Then it finally worked.
Don't ever say those words again with that intonation. I had to use Chrome in like a pissed off way. Is not
seriously.
The right, it's not the right way of thinking, Sam.
Just because we use Windows doesn't mean you have to use IE.
God.
For the love of God.
Well,
I've always wondered. I go on the W3 statistics, and I'm like, the fuck still uses IE? And it like blows my mind every time.
China.
I had no idea you were one of them.
There's this Sam
glad
data point right there,
you.
Just chilling.
Seriously.
What are those numbers at, anyway? Like how many percentages?
I'll bring them
IE?
Up so you guys make noises into your microphones.
Okay, so what I've been doing is I had talked about how I was going to work a little bit on real money slots. I got a little bit distracted from that. I'm working on this startup. I'm getting real deep into MySQL schemas and things like that. There's some cool stuff that I did not know how to do with MySQL, which is kind of embarrassing, but I guess I never really took a database class. A lot of my MySQL has just kind of been homegrown. So, like, I never got really advanced with joins and, like, remote foreign keys and mapping tables and stuff like that. We can definitely get into some of that if Merrick would be probably the only person on the level to talk about MySQL. But Merrick's
I've
busy.
Recently, even in Drupal 7, I've been getting a little more hands-on with that stuff. And if you wanted to build a Drupal 7 site, you don't actually have to get hands-on with SQL,
right,
but because
kinda,
we're transitioning, we do. So that's part
gotcha.
Of what's going on. So I do have those statistics up if we want to jump back to those
it.
Real quick. And granted, this is visitors to the website w3schools.com, which is a pretty good resource for if you want to brush up on your HTML, CSS, XML, JavaScript, ASP, PHP, or SQL knowledge, even more they have. It's a handy little introduction, like, you know, learner's resource for those things I mentioned. So this does not represent the internet, but granted that caveat, for October of 2011, 21% of visitors were using Internet Explorer, 38% of visitors were using Firefox, 32% Chrome, 4.2% Safari, and 2.4% Opera. So I rounded those numbers down, but that is the breakdown for October 2011.
All right.
And they do have historical statistics, too, so you can browse back and see, you know, how the numbers are moving. And obviously, I think Chrome and Firefox are taking over, and it's impressive how much Chrome has caught up to Firefox, granted how long they have been out versus Firefox. So that's kind of cool, too, and a shout-out for Chrome because it's awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll talk back to what I was been doing. Some of the software we're working with is using Java Beans, and I don't know much about Java, but since I'm pretty like a versatile programmer, I can pick stuff up pretty easily. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting about Java and using Java Beans is that after you first visit the web page, first off, it compiles a web page the first time you visit it, so you kind of get a slow load time in the beginning, which I think you can avoid, but that's kind of weird. But after that, it stays resident in memory, so any time that you request it again, the process is already running, so it can give you the data quicker, and it doesn't incur the fee of starting up a new process to handle your request.
Nice.
Whereas I know PHP has that fee, I'm pretty sure that Python has that as well, where it has to start a new thread just to handle your Python request. I don't know about Rails, Ruby on Rails, although it's possible that Ruby also has sort of those issues, but, you know, whatever.
Also, what often happens with more serious websites, and depending on the type of transactions that are happening on these websites, is content is cached. So unless you're doing something unique or moving data back and forth, if you're requesting a common page, even if on the back end there is a scripting language that generates it, if nothing has changed on the server side, then that will be cached and you'll likely, you know, get it without having that computational cost.
Which is
so that's
cool.
Something to contemplate too.
Yeah. Great.
So I had heard of Java Beans before, and I never read about them, and I just pulled up the Wikipedia, and I'm going to read that so I can understand it and see what you guys think about it.
Yeah.
Java Beans are reusable software components for Java. Practically, they are classes written in the Java programming language conforming to a particular convention. They are used to encapsulate many objects into a single object, parentheses, the bean, so that they can be passed around as a single bean object instead as of multiple objects. A Java bean is a Java object that is serializable, has
serializable.
A nullary constructor, and allows access to properties using getter and setter methods. So now I know what a Java bean is.
So I guess maybe my description was a little bit inaccurate. I think maybe JSP, which is Java Server Pages, I think maybe that is the technology that lets you have resident in-memory processes, and that the Java beans are kind of as you described. They allow you to encapsulate like an entire multiple objects and things and send them around.
Okay. I actually didn't know. That's why I had to look it up. I wasn't trying to challenge
you. No, I know,
what you
but
said.
That's good that you made that clarification for that one Java programmer in the entire world who's yelling right now at me.
You know,
I'm so wrong.
They're out there. It's Java's more popular than you would think. I remember on one of my curiosity tirades, I went and tried to like find all the different resources there were online for a comparison by the numbers of programming languages that are being used. And one of the more, you know, authoritative
resources.
Weren't
we at TwilioCon when you did that? I feel like we were.
I've done it a couple times, but one of the cool things you can do is on GitHub, you can break it down by language, which is cool because you can
by
see
language, right?
Activity of, you know,
right,
oh shit,
right.
This is how many people are committing on this language or this language or this language. So that's a nifty little tool next time you're on GitHub, in addition to their super fun 2D, 3D little random error messages.
You don't want to miss that.
No.
Great.
So go to GitHub, try to break their website, and profit. Good news. So are we caught up
numbers.
On your life then?
Yeah, I mean, that's not that. I mean, I don't really have a lot of stuff to say about it. I mean, I could go into depth about the MySQL stuff I've been learning, but I don't know. Maybe when I'm a little bit better at MySQL.
No, that's the thing, too. It's tip of the iceberg. Like, that's how serious MySQL or SQL is by itself. Like, even though you can be like, oh, yeah, I know SQL. I've totally, like, written these statements that get, like, you know, information out, and I put information in the database. That's the tip of the friggin' iceberg. It is.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I am really, like, I did a lot of my own queries, and I just figured it out myself. But, I didn't know about how to construct the tables properly and how to get the most, you know, speed. Because, I mean, what I'm doing right now needs to be able to scale, like, to millions of users. That's the goal, right? So, you know, you have to make sure that you don't do anything that's extremely inefficient. And most of the time what you end up doing is you end up you end up using more hard drive space at the cost of more hard drive space, you get more performance, which is amazing because hard drive space is so cheap. Right, I mean, it's like less than $1 a gigabyte, right? So it doesn't matter if you use hard drive space; you just want to get the performance out. Whereas buying multiple cores because you can't program it right, it's not really the right approach, right?
So. You can always throw hardware at it, but that will only work for so long.
Exactly.
So, are you guys committed to a SQL solution for your service then?
Yes, although I don't think we're going to run the chat over SQL, which was one of my questions. We have a technical advisor who is very versed in this kind of thing, but doesn't have very much time to help us out.
Yeah.
So I can just ask him questions, and then I get feedback, and I feel like I know how to implement the things he says.
I kind of want one of those people.
Yeah, technical advisors are hard to come by. Like, maybe you should one of your Colmac buddies at Nextbase or something, but, you know.
Yeah, serious. Speaking of Colmac, I'm starting to, like, pick a little speed up. Not to say I've, like, been on Typeface or anything, but I left off in, what's the name of that program I used? MasterKey.
Typing of the Dead.
The last lesson I was doing was for special characters, which is to say that in numbers is all I have left to do on the MasterKey training program. So,
but numbers don't even change, right? So,
Yeah.
And no, only they don't. Like question
But that's
mark.
The thing, I never learned to touch type, so granted, there's okay. still that whole thing. but the numbers I use most frequently, I have down, what's still, I have to poke around a little bit, like what's annoying is the reach ones, like the 5, 6, 7, those are a little bit weird for me, but the 1 through 4 and the 8 through 0 are no problem, I've got those already.
So you just, the numbers you use the most often, which would be like 1 and 0, like that's your bank account balance, right? That's what you use, that's what
yeah.
you use the most often.
Yeah, and my PIN number in case anybody wants it, because I only have 1 and 0 in my bank right now. But no, like in the coding I'm doing at work now, I'm, you know, with the prins and the curly brackets and the square brackets, I'm all pimped out on those, and the semicolon, like me
and so you're using COMAC full time,
oh, yeah.
right? On your
oh,
desktop
yeah.
at
no,
home?
Oh yeah, no, I registry... Freaking hacked all my PCs that I have for COMAC, and it's funny too because our IT guy at work like came over. He's like, oh, "This is how you do it," and just nonsense came out the screen. I'm like, "Let me type it in." He's like, "What the hell?" He's like, "God damn it, it's pretty funny."
You know, to that effect, my boss came and sat down at my computer, and I have the keys flipped around to COMAC, but at the moment it was actually in QWERTY mode, so the same thing happened to him because he was typing the letters and he was touch typing. I mean, not that he, and then he, it was all wrong again because it wasn't matched
He's
up.
He's like, seriously. Yeah, dude. What's cool about speaking of, I'm excited when I change my bank account balance to have like more than 1 0 in it. I want to get one of the new DOS keyboards because even though you hooked me up with this first gen, which I think is awesome and we should keep just for historical reference, the new ones have a built-in trainer to the keyboard itself.
I don't even know what that means, but that sounds really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. That and you can like switch on the fly from the keyboard, so you don't have to fuck around in Windows or the registry or whatever operating system you're using even.
So the DOS keyboard is now sporting new layouts?
Yes. I guess if I understand the question, you can switch layouts using the keyboard on the fly.
Oh, cool.
Without me looking, and I remember reading about that and being excited, so if I'm wrong, I'll definitely put in the show notes what the actual deal is, but that's what it got me excited, and I'm pretty sure I'm remembering that right.
Dude, the both of
and,
you definitely need
that
feature.
And it has a built-in training utility too, so you can, and this is, again, a high-quality keyboard with cherry switches available in 3 different varieties or flavors, ha 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 ha, and you can get it with or without the labeling on the keys, so if you want to take it to the next level, you get to get a blank keyboard, and you show up with that thing, and people will just be like, yes, master. So anyway, yeah, keyboard's cool.
So magic numbers?
Yes, it's time.
So short distraction depth, what Merrick was talking about, magic numbers or whatever. But basically, a magic number is in programming. Let's say, for an example, you have an array that it has 10 spots in your array. So when you make the array, you just put the number 10 in. And then now a little bit later in your code, you have a for loop that looks at every spot in that array. So you just say for I equals 0 as long as I is less than 10, I plus plus. So that is a magic number because you have the 10 up above where you declare the array, and then you have 10 where you're using it as a for loop. And then later on, if you were to have another for loop with 10, well, that's just propagation of the magic number. Now this is a pretty, like, that was my understanding of magic numbers, and that was kind of the end of it, but I guess
as a
last
follow-up,
yeah.
An addendum, my original C++ programming instructor delivered it to us pretty good, and how he put it was pretty much any number except for -1, 0, 1, and maybe sometimes, but it's rare, 2 is a magic number. So you have these 3 basic tools, sometimes 2 is a fourth. Numbers, tools, whatever, and you can use those throughout your code however you please, as long as it makes sense. But anytime you use any other numbers in there, it's more or less considered a magic number because
and it should be defined in a variable. So the solution, at least like a basic C way to solve this, would be to just make a pound define and then just put the number everywhere, which doesn't actually take any memory. It's just the same as if you'd put the number in, because a pound define is a search and replace kind of operation. Which happens at compile time, or you can make a variable which could be changed or updated on the run.
Exactly. In the head, usually you would find these, depending on the language and, you know, how you organize your code, you'll use a pound define, which I believe is also the same thing as a constant, if, correct me if I'm wrong. So
yeah, it's the same thing as a constant. But see, now what I was going to mention, you kind of said it a little bit better, but what I was going to mention was that magic numbers can be like, okay, so let's say we had this example of 10, where you have an array size 10, and then you have a couple loops with 10 in them, right? So to fix that magic number, you might think that you could just do a global search, and then, you know, search and replace 10, and then you'd be done, right? But sometimes magic numbers are offset. So for instance, if you wanted to only loop through the first half of the array, you might say for I equals 0, as long as I is less than 5, I++. And that would give you a loop through the first half of the array, but you would miss it when you were doing your search and replace, because you would say, oh, it's 10, I found all the instances of 10, and now I'm done. But then in the future, you would have an issue, because that 5 would still be in there, and that 5 wouldn't be dynamically defined. So if you ever change your array size, your code would break. And so that's pretty nasty, because you have to think about the fact that if you're looking at some legacy code and you're trying to replace magic numbers, you have to find like the base number, but also anything that's been offset. So you might have like a 10 plus 2 or a 10 minus 2 or something like that that you'd have to kind of figure out. So they can be really tricky to find if you're working with legacy code.
Yeah, and it's not to say you can't use numbers other than the ones I mentioned in your code. It's just they should be constants, the constant should be well named, and they should all be in one place in your code. So that's those good rules, and for more on that, again, Robert C. Martin's book, Clean Code, he goes in and that teaches you the way of the Jedi.
Very nice.
So we caught up on our lives then, and we're moving right along then to the
Sam
thing with the stuff.
Is he here?
Yeah.
Sam?
Yeah. Your magic
What's
numbers.
Up, Sam? How's it going?
When you mentioned magic numbers, I thought of the...
Did we covered all our other distraction depths, right? In
I think
ADD
so.
Levels?
I
think so.
Shows
all
up?
Right.
Yeah, I think so.
Good. Cool.
You wouldn't want to have any of those.
So,
astray.
Ben, you might have been attempting an upgrade on something, maybe?
I would, but I want to hear what this wave codec, G spot exclamation point.
I was curious about that, but I couldn't even understand it.
So your brain just
he blocked
over
it out.
Most nonsense I do witness in a day, my brain will skip over, and if someone draws my attention back to it, I'm like, all right, fine. But
you got like a
so
a
yeah,
filter.
Let's talk
That's
about
pretty
that.
Good. We were given a bunch of jail calls. And CD format. They're just a bunch of waves. And so I was given back one of the discs by the attorneys telling me he couldn't listen to half of them, so I'm thinking, God, what a noob. So I loaded them up, and sure enough, some of them wouldn't play. So I tried them in VLC. Still wouldn't play. So I started running
what?
Them through... You're shocked?
I'm extremely shocked.
Yeah, me
VLC
too.
Is like the Swiss Army knife of...
Yeah, you know you're
really
screwed.
Is.
If it doesn't play in VLC, you're in big trouble.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know VLC, it's Video LAN Client. It's a really, really good movie player for Windows and Mac and Linux, I think.
Well, audio
although
player,
it's not the
movie,
best for
audio,
Linux. Yeah, video, audio. But it's really nice because if you remember back in the days when the DivX video started coming out, you couldn't play the videos unless you installed the goddamn codec pack, and then sometimes the codec pack would break other things, or
God,
like,
still
God,
does.
It was such a mess.
So bad. And remember Real Audio, too,
oh,
and Real Video, and that
God.
Nonsense? That shit that's still around?
Such
so
shit. Anyways, VLC
bad.
Comes packaged with all those codecs in the source code. So
yep.
Basically, they don't affect the other codecs on the system, which is amazing. And you can play. I don't think I've ever found anything that won't play. Maybe unless it was broken, basically.
Hence
yeah.
The shock.
I'm shocked.
So
yeah, me too.
What did you do, Sam?
It happens from time to time. So I started dragging them all into this program called G-Spot, which will identify...
The
codecs for audio
I
and
like
video.
It.
It's excellent. Have you ever used it before?
I think I have.
No, I'm not familiar with that specific G-spot.
It is pretty awesome. So I start dragging them in, and it's able to identify about half of them. And then the other half, it just tells me unknown. It shows me the header,
wow.
Which is just like, I don't forget what it is, but it says unknown. And so I'm thinking, well, either those WAV files are corrupted in some way, or they're using some really old school codec of some sort that nobody knows of, you know?
Right.
And nobody can
And it
play.
Definitely is going to be old. It's not going to be new because this is coming from a jail, right? So
Yeah. There's just no way. It's definitely some old school 90s catastrophe. I can't even tell you how much software they give me that is designed for the Windows 3.1 era.
Oh.
And it operates in that fashion. It's got that the UI with really large buttons, and it doesn't really make sense.
The old school file open dialog. Have you seen that, anyone, recently?
I have, yeah.
I don't even know. I mean, you probably have, Sam. What about you, Merrick, where it has the Windows 3.1 open file open dialog?
I'll give you a quick Easter egg.
Yeah. Not recently, but I know what you're talking about.
God, I don't
remember what it
was. You can
see it if you take a look inside of an installation of Windows Vista. In there, you can navigate to Windows/fonts, go into your fonts folder. I got to do it right now so I can walk you guys through it, since somebody has a Windows Vista installation on this planet other than myself. And go ahead and hit the Alt key to bring up the file menu, and then click Install New Font. When you click that in Windows Vista, it brings up the very same old-school browse dialog box.
God, it's so crazy. Do you think Windows 7 has that?
It doesn't. They fixed it finally in Windows 7.
Oh, man.
Well, I don't know if you want to say fixed. I mean, who's to say it's broken? It still works fine, but Jesus Christ.
No, it doesn't. You can't copy and paste in a path, so broken.
Correct. Broken. I agree with that. I get so pissed. There's that other dialog box, too. You know the one I'm talking about, where you can't paste in a path.
Right,
because
it's letting you choose the folder, but you just want to goddamn paste in the path.
Yeah, that's the worst.
So, for those of you who, in podcast land, when you're browsing through a folder and you see the path, it's basically the fully qualified name. So, like, /user/whatever/documents/downloads, like, whatever.
/PRON/BSDID. Oh, wait, no, I'm just kidding.
2G1C.AVI. That entire path, you know, a lot of times, like, I consider myself a power user. If I have a folder open and I have a totally separate program and I want to save something into that folder I have open, I'll just Control-C the path into my clipboard, and then I'll go and paste it when I save out the file. And when it says save file as, if you can, paste an entire path into that file name box, and it'll just take you straight to the folder, and then you can at that point type in the name that you want to save it as, and that's something that allows me to basically navigate the system a lot faster, because I can connect things through my clipboard. Like, basically, I can connect application in ways they never were meant to be connected. Like, I could say I want you to connect here, or like whatever. Anyways, that dialog doesn't let you do that, and it's like, as a power user, it slows my entire goddamn day down, especially because I have to complain to people around me that I can't believe I can't paste the path into this box right now.
So not only does it take the 3 extra seconds for you to, you know, navigate, maybe even 5 to the folder.
Well,
because
I have to use the mouse, and I'm not very good at the mouse. I mean, I'm a lot better at the keyboard, right?
So then by the time you go find a coworker to complain and bitch about Windows, that's easily a few minutes down the toilet.
Yeah, it's down the toilet.
Okay, another problem I have with that is that I have a ton of drives plugged on my work at computer, including it's 1 terabyte, but it's RAID 1. So that thing is just mostly sitting there most of the day in idle mode.
Right.
You know, but I need data from it, you know, about once a day or something, enough so that I don't want to unplug it and put it away. It's just plugged in. And whenever that damn dialog box comes up that doesn't let me paste in a path, since it browses in whatever mode it is, it insists on spinning up every goddamn drive I have plugged in.
Right,
which is like, I don't know, I think 10 different drives external
and
of some
any
sort.
CDs you might have in your computer too.
Yeah, it'll spin everything up, and I'm like, God, like the whole computer will freeze up for, you know, since there's 2 drives in RAID 1, I think, you know, it takes a good like 10 seconds for everything to spin up and
God,
and
first world problems, right?
It's terrible. You guys don't even know. Ben, you usually use the F4 key to access the breadcrumb bar, the address bar.
Right, so you can just basically, if you're in a Windows 7 box, or you just press F4 and then Control-C, and that'll get you the entire path of the folder that you're at.
Yeah, for me, it doesn't do that. I hit F4 and it brings it to like a typing mode, so I hit F4 escape real quick, then it highlights it, then Control-C.
I mean, that works. I mean, that's, you know, yeah.
Maybe it's because you're using Internet Explorer.
It's broken.
God.
That's
so
cool.
Did you find
the codec? G-spot. So
nope.
did you figure out the waves then, or what?
No, they're screwed. What am I gonna do?
Oh, I wasn't sure if there was a happy ending to that or not.
Yeah,
not,
happy endings only happen in the movies.
Yeah.
Not really. They insist that they've told me before that there is a codec and it does work, but it's so old. So I'm gonna boot up a VM and ask them for the really old school codec. And
I have a Windows 3.1 VM if you want it.
Oh, nice. I would appreciate
Dude,
that.
Dude, that's crazy.
It's running on Zen server. It's pretty legit.
What the fuck for?
What the fuck not for? Okay, you don't have Windows 3.1 at your house.
Oh god. Anyway,
can I get a VNC to that?
Yeah, you can VNC into it.
Nice. How does that work? You can run it on that, and it just...
No, Sam. I feel like you missed the point of virtualization, man. The hypervisor provides you with the VNC. It's at the hypervisor level, so it doesn't matter what OS you're running. The hypervisor does it.
Okay.
Like you with me that on that? Is that
no, I totally get that. I just can't imagine how that interface would look in the VNC window, that's all.
I think one of you guys should just stop fucking around and commit and try to migrate back to Windows 3.1 your whole life, all of it.
I don't think they have internet drivers sorted out.
Do it. Load up the original Internet Explorer. You don't think there was no IE back then? I guess not, huh?
No, there wasn't, dude. There was Netscape.
Well, shit. Fuck IE. Go Netscape. See what CSS you can display with Netscape.
Oh, no.
Madness.
We'll see what MySpace looks like on Netscape.
Try any website. The only website you're going to be able to pull up is, like, the Internet Archives. Oh, wait, no, but I'll bet that even renders it in modern code, huh? So that'd be pointless.
You could pull up, example.com, and that's about it.
You could probably, like, if there's still text-based sites out there, too?
Example.com is a great one.
Is it?
Yeah.
Huh.
That looks like it's really modern.
Oh, never mind. Forget example.com. Perhaps try oldexample.com. Oh, man. So, definitely good luck, Sam, with finding the G-spot for those files.
Thank you very much.
And then that means, is it Ben's turn?
Yeah, so I just bought an Asus EEE PC. It's a little dual-core. It's supposed to have 8 hours of battery life. But the first thing that I did when I bought it, it was $300, which is so cheap, it's so great. But I wanted to put an SSD in. So the process for upgrading the RAM on this little PC was really simple. You just take off one screw and the RAM, the bay pops off and the RAM is right there. But to get to the hard drive, I believe it's like 27 screws, something like
yeah,
that.
Oh,
that's a few
no,
more.
Is it underneath the motherboard?
Yeah, it's underneath the keyboard.
God,
yeah, it's so
no.
fucked. And so basically you have to take off the RAM, and then there's a screw under one of the RAM DIMMs, so you have to take out one of the RAMs, unscrew the screws, flip it over, take off the touchpad, take off the keyboard.
Gotcha.
So the video that I saw was just some like German guy with a pretty cool accent describing how to take down this laptop. But he gave me, I would say, poor advice on how to remove the touchpad. And I ended up damaging the way that the touchpad snaps. It's basically like the whole palm rest. So damaging the way that it snapped back down. It still snaps together, but you can see like a gap, you know? And it creaks a lot more now, Sam. I know you love creaking laptops.
Oh,
that's
God.
Like your favorite thing, right?
Yeah.
You could probably even order a replacement part for it, though.
Yeah, I thought about that, but I kind of needed something more immediate. Like, I wanted this to start working just right now.
Yeah.
So,
Well, I mean, you know, if you order it and then down the road, whatever.
So basically what happened was the touchpad stops working. So the touchpad will be working for, like, fine for just, like, 5 minutes, and then it'll just stop working. And the only way around it is to reboot the computer. It's kind of like a pain in the ass.
Yeah, that sounds like it. So might want to fix that.
So I read around some more. It's a grounding problem. So basically the touchpad has like a little, I think it's 4-wire ribbon cable, the super thin kind.
Mm-hmm.
And to detach it, you have to like use a screwdriver to pull, like it's like a little bracket. You pull it out a little bit and then the cable slides out. I don't know if that makes sense, if you guys know what I'm talking about.
If anyone's ever taken it apart, they understand. Yeah. If not, just go ahead and take your laptop over, and then you'll see what he's talking
about.
You'll
see exactly what I'm talking about. But it turns out that the ground wire is not run through that cable. It's actually run through, it's like a spring finger. There's like a metal plate under the touchpad, and there's like a spring finger, and then the touchpad has to sit down correctly on top of that finger with enough force to make contact. And basically, since my laptop was a little bit, it doesn't go back together just exactly right, it no longer was making good contact. So I tried, like, everything to get this thing working again. I tried, what did I do? I tried putting something under the spring so it would have more force. Didn't work. I tried soldering a wire from one part to the other and didn't work. So what I ended up having to do was I took a wire and I wrapped it around, there's a screw into the grounding plate, so I wrapped the wire one end around that, and then the other end I have this really cool epoxy, which is called silver conductive epoxy. I have it right here. It's just got like the two tubes just like you would normally have. And it's about $22 at Fry's, so kind of expensive, but I mean, I've had this around for a while because I knew I would totally need it. And basically, I just epoxied the wire to the contact part on the underside of the touchpad, and it works great. So basically, cool. It was just a ground return, like, problem. And after having performed the procedure, I had this, like, flashback from, like, some long, distant past life where I had fixed someone else's laptop and I had to, like, solder a wire because of the ground path. And I had, like, don't even remember whose laptop it was, but I totally soldered a wire from, the case to the touchpad because of this issue. I don't know why they don't fix this, or I don't know why laptop makers don't have something better solution for this, but...
Well, it's kind of... It makes sense in the...
Lean startup kind of way. It does make sense.
Yeah, like it goes together and comes apart with out too much madness. So that's kind of how.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I've noticed on previous laptop disassemblies that a lot of different components are grounded through these interesting, clever little ways, and it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, you just have to make sure it goes back together the same way, or else it could be the beginning of badness for you.
Right, and so, I mean, I could have soldered. I mean, it did look like a metal contact, but I don't think that... I think that it had plastic on the other side, right? So soldering to something that has plastic right there is just going to melt it. Like, I mean, I don't really know any kind of better way to do that. But with this epoxy, it lets you kind of connect wires to places you could never, ever connect a wire to before. So it's pretty cool.
Good job on repairing it. Nice.
All right. And now, you know, now the SSD is installed... And nice. The touchpad works, and it boots nice and fast.
Which SSD did you go with?
I went with a 60 gig by, I want to say OCZ, but I'm not positive. Yeah, it was an OCZ. It's supposed to have like 500 write and 400 read, or 500 read, 400 write, something like that.
Pretty freaking fast.
Nice. What drive did that thing come with originally?
Oh, just some hard drive. It's 320 gigs. I don't know.
Slow mechanical hard drive. That's what kind.
Yeah, the bullshit kind.
Yeah, SSDs are the shit. I still have fantasies of a Revo drive, but it's not near the top of my priority list. So
Sam keeps talking about it like some fucking pipe dream. I don't think he's ever going to buy one.
No, probably not.
It does make your computer amazingly faster, Sam, so if you use your computer a lot and you're not just poking at the G-spot, you should consider that upgrade. Definitely.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it.
So, I don't know, there's this SSD trim concept, which we did talk about. But are you familiar with, like, the, I don't know, it's like some sort of cliff, Merrick, where you'll use your drive and it's fast and it's fast and it's fast, and then you hit, like, a specific amount of writes and it slows down dramatically? Have you kind of heard about that, or?
Yeah, the last specific article I read regarding that, more focused on once the drive fills up, performance drops off a cliff. So be aware of that, and I think that was targeted at... I don't know if it was a specific or all SSDs, but it was pretty intriguing to read about.
As you get close to the fullness
of the
drive.
Yeah, and thankfully this was high 90s percentages, so it wasn't like, you know, you could use most of your drive and still be all right. Like
because I'm pretty sure that has happened to me. So I'll tell you, like, I bought a drive at work. My work, they're so cheap that, I mean, I don't get the hardware that I need, right? And so I was trying to buy new RAM for my motherboard, and I realized that my motherboard only supports 2 gigs of RAM.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I just wanted to, like, die inside, right? So I decided, well, I'll get an SSD, and then I'll do a Ready Boost cache.
Dude, how old is that motherboard?
I don't... It's an E-Machines. Like, I mean, Jesus Christ.
It's probably just like a bargain
like,
box.
Like three, it's like 3 or 4 years old.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, so there's this thing called Ready Boost, which basically it's like a swap file, but it's optimized for flash memory. And so
you're just
going
to point it at a pseudo drive?
No, you just plug it in a USB drive. I've never had any good success with that. Did it work out for you?
Well, either I might have been doing Ready Boost. You know, I might have just been doing a swap file. I can't remember if it was one or the other.
Yeah, swap would be better, I would think.
Well, Ready Boost, but I mean, Merrick, Ready Boost is exactly swap, but it's just optimized for SSD. So,
well, for flash memory, external, but if you could point it at a fake drive on your SSD, that'd be kind of cool.
Well, ReadyBoost doesn't take over the entire drive. It just has a file, so there's no need to point it at any kind of fake drive. You just say, use this drive for ReadyBoost with this much size, and it makes a file called ReadyBoost cache.
Okay, I was just assuming it was going to be looking for a USB, which would be...
No, it'll do... I'm pretty sure it does this drive. Anyways, cool. So it made my computer run so much faster because I had, like, the 6 gigs of... you know, swap space or whatever. Nice. But awesome. About 1 week ago, my performance hit the ground, and I started noticing that any program like Chrome or whatever would take forever to work, and it really seemed like it was a memory thing. Like, I would close it, and it would just take forever and ever and ever. It was like a very sharp drop-off. And that's interesting that you told me with the high 90s, because I'm pretty sure that I'm close to use all the space features on that drive.
Yeah, I'll try to dig up the article for the show notes because it was intriguing to read about. I have not specifically hit, I don't think, that problem with my Patriot, but I do have an older SSD, and I am pretty good about it. I always keep minimum 10% free on it. So
right. I mean, but the thing is they say, like, they say you don't want to put a swap file on an SSD because you have lots and lots of writes, and that'll just basically burn through your...
I mean, that matters.
It does matter. I mean, this is something that's like sort of internet knowledge. Like, you're not supposed to put your swap drive on your SSD.
I do what I want. Gosh.
Well, that's what I did, because I just bought a real cheap SSD as long as I had, you know, I basically knew that I was putting a lot of swap on there, and I knew I was going to burn through the drive, but I'm just not sure if I should, like, throw it away or whatever.
Yeah,
and
without
there's this...
the numbers, I mean, how long does it take to significantly cause a permanent performance hit in one of these things?
I mean, this is the thing. There's this application that I got off of a Maximum PC, one of the CDs, you know, they get in the mail, and it was called SSD Life, like SSD for Life, and it said my drive had 70% lifetime left.
Wow.
So I don't understand if I've hit some sort of thing, and it also says that trim is enabled, so I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
I'm curious. I want to run that shit online. Do you remember which month it was, that CD?
No, I don't.
Every month I get the magazine, I open it, I throw the CD in the closet. I never even put it in my computer.
You just throw it across the room like you did with
my
those
closet.
Rewritables?
My closet. Oh,
all the good stuff, Merrick, you're just throwing away.
No, I have a pile of them. I just, like, back in the...
It says
years
SSD
ago,
life along the rim of the CD.
I think I'll just go online and download it.
I got some free coupon thing, and so I went over because it was going to expire today, and I purchased 3 DVD mini RWs.
Ooh.
And I immediately thought of you, Merrick, about how you'd throw them away if you came to my house.
Look
like,
at you,
oh,
diversifying
this,
your storage portfolio.
And what's the capacity on the mini DVDs?
I think that they're 1.5 gigabytes.
They are fun because they're small.
Now, the reason why I would want a mini DVD rewritable is because I found myself doing all sorts of obnoxious stuff recently. There's been this very irritating virus that doesn't get picked up by Microsoft Security Essentials, and I mentioned it in the last podcast, but browser helper objects stuff.
Right.
And so I had to burn one of these fantastic Avira antivirus CDs. And it's too big for a mini CD RW, which I have a whole bunch of, and I have them everywhere, like I'm at work, and I have them just all over the place, because I end up needing to burn a CD, and I don't want to waste a CDR, it's not that important, so I stick it on a CD RW. But the DVD RW hits the spot just perfectly with 1.5 gigs, so looking forward to using those forever and ever. Don't throw them away, Merrick, please, thanks. Appreciate that.
So there's a much, much better solution here to wasting any kind of CDs, and that is to use a USB drive as a CD-ROM deal. So there's a link we'll put in the show notes, which is called YUMI Multi-Boot USB Creator, and what we're linking you to is a little guide which tells you how to use this little tool. Now, I've had need for this because my Asus netbook does not have an optical drive, so I can't use boot CDs. So basically, this little program is a program for Windows. You download it, and there's a whole long list of different kinds of Linux operating systems that you can put on there. And basically, you need to have a USB drive that you're willing to format, so take off all the stuff that you want on there, and you choose the drive letter. in this program, and then you say format the drive, which is, you know, you have to do that for the first time that you make it. And then if you don't want to put Linux on this thing, you scroll all the way down to the very bottom, and there's something that says like custom ISO or something like to that effect. And you can choose any ISO you want, and it will add it to the little USB. But the coolest part is that if you run the tool again, you can add on multiple ISOs. So when you run the tool again, you don't click the format button. And so I was able to put like Partition Magic and Acronis on a little USB key. So now I can carry this around, and I can just boot up, and if I need to like resize my partition on my SSD or like whatever, I'm good to go. And actually the reason I did this was because I wanted, before I even turned the laptop on for the first time, I wanted an image of it. So basically an image before anything's been changed, before anything crappy has gone on. So I created an image from the physical spinning drive and saved it on my network using the Acronis, my little USB Acronis booter. And then I put the SSD in, dealt with my whole other issues, and finally restored back the image. And so now I had it working on the SSD, and all the drivers and all the stuff that Asus has for the special touchpad and the camera and all that crap's all there. So it's great.
Dude, nice.
Cool. Yeah, the USB as a an ISO to load anything, whether it be an operating system or other stuff, is awesome because it's that much faster than the CD-ROM.
Have either of you guys tried this?
Oh yeah, I loaded Windows 7 multiple times that way.
It's glorious. It's so great. It's so fast. Sam, you got to get up with the times.
Seriously.
Working on it.
Download it. The link's right there, man. It's so cool.
Put those mini DVD-Rs in your drawer and start using the stick.
I also purchased a 16 gigabyte flash drive. So maybe I will.
I mean, the EXE is 800K, Sam.
Dude, what do you think I'm made of? Bandwidth? Christ. all right.
So you 60? How many gigs?
16.
16 gigs. I wonder what the performance is on that. I wonder if it's pretty slow. I bet you it is.
It was on sale, right?
Probably is. Yeah, it was Epic sale.
Yeah, I wonder why you would
fit. I wanted to fit it within the coupon.
Yeah, I wonder why you'd spend money on something.
No, it's cool. Sam will do it every now and then, like if his life depends on it or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that's the smart way, because his bank account balance compared to mine, he's got zeros in there. That's okay. We've already had that discussion in the past. He's going to be in charge of my money when I start making too much of it. So that's the good news. Sam's taking over.
All right, nice. When you do a RAM dump of a system, if you're capturing it to a USB drive, mm-hmm. and let's say I go, for example, my laptop or my desktop over here has 8 gigs of RAM, and if I start doing a RAM dump of that, and my flash drive's only 4, it's not going to give me a dump of only 4. It's gonna blue screen it for the most part. You know, it depends a lot, but on the tool you're using. But for the most part, it'll end up with just a blue screen. You won't get anything, so you lose all that volatile data. So it's really important you have a flash drive that's larger, like 16 gigs. I mean, it's not going to be that common. You're going to end up doing a RAM dump of a system with 16 gigs on it. So
that's true.
Yeah,
that's good to know.
Yeah, you want to blue screen your volatile data.
So, has somebody been playing with the spinny thing recently?
Dude, I have fully been playing with the spinny thing.
And by the spinny thing, do you mean the Mac spinny thing?
No, actually, much more amusing than that. But the, you know, the end result is the same. Something you're staring at something, right?
And it's so, spinning, and something else is happening. Nice. So tell us the story, Sam.
So I think about 10 podcasts ago is when I first ran custom backup, and what that does is it backs up all of your Cydia packages in for your jailbroken iDevice.
Did you tell us about that on the podcast?
I don't remember if I did.
I'm pretty sure
I
you didn't.
Because
I've listened to all the podcast probably more than anyone else in the world, so.
That's why you're awesome, Ben.
Oh, thank you. Go kill yourself.
No, I'm serious. You have a high tolerance for our shenanigans. If
apparently.
You there's no way you'd be able to listen to shows over and over again.
What you need is a backup of all of your Cydia stuff over time. I mean, Ben, you have a jailbroken iDevice.
I do, and I don't go to Cydia that often because I kind of have everything that I want. I've got my SP settings,
right.
And I've got a couple other things that I need, but I wish there was something like this for the normal apps. Because well, you know, I mean, it doesn't back up your normal. Apps. Like if I was to buy a new phone or whatever, it wouldn't. It doesn't back up your apps.
Really?
Pretty sure it doesn't, unless it's changed recently.
I kind of think it does, but I haven't
tried
it. It
does. In .ipa format with iTunes. When you restore it, it'll restore all of your stuff in iTunes.
Yeah.
But does it restore my high score on Angry Birds? That's the real question.
As long as you're updated,
depends.
Game Center should have all that.
Yeah, there's some stuff that's stored, server-side, cloud-side, and there's other stuff that's stored in the app itself.
And
some of it
Steve Jobs took to the grave with him.
Oh.
Like iTunes performance, more on that later. But
I had a whole bunch of content stored in my apps that are just local data, you know, before a lot of it was stored in the cloud. And when I set up my phone as new, I wanted to keep a lot of that data, so I ended up using the SSH tool and just manually copying over the data files for a lot
of
the
sucks.
Applications.
I wish that someone would figure out a way to back that up using like a tutorial on how to do that using SSH, because I would totally do that. But I want it to be simple. I don't want to have to go for every app or whatever. Like, that's such a pain in my ass.
Yeah,
like,
it was really a pain in the ass. But, you know, generally speaking, you're supposed to restore your phone. You're not supposed to set it up as new and then copy your old stuff over. You know what I mean? And so I did it that way.
Yeah, restore from backup, I'm pretty sure, brings everything along. Granted, I haven't done this, like, in the past week or so.
Correct. It's one of those things, you know, my devices are acting weird, and all Apple ever says, if you get to them with any technical problem, all they ever tell you to do is restore as new. That's that's their solution. There's never any actual technical investigation that happens. It's just like,
God,
oh, have you restored it?
That would take
time
and resources.
Yeah, no, restore it. And they say, why haven't you restored it as a new phone? I'm like, well, let's see, because I don't want to lose all of my data. Just a thought. I don't know, maybe. Yeah, so my solution was to restore it as new and then manually make everything look exactly the same, which takes forever. I do not recommend doing that.
Speaking of, God, distraction depth and on topic. Well, I guess it's not even distraction depth if it's on topic, whatever. I have a friend with an iPad, and she has a couple roommates. One of them was a known retard, and the other was suspected. So we hadn't confirmed this yet, and I do mean not as in having physical disabilities. I would never make fun of those people, but I mean as in regular people that just do dumb shit. So he picks up her iPad and says, oh, I want to play with this thing. Wrong password. Wrong password. Wrong password.
Oh, no.
And then it goes into lockdown for 1 minute. He waits. Wrong password. Wrong password.
Oh, no.
Wrong password. Then it goes into lockdown for 5 minutes. He waits. Again, he does it again until it goes into lockdown for 15 minutes, and then an hour, and then a second time for an hour. And after the second lockdown for an hour, he tries however many more wrong passwords, and then the device wipes itself.
Wow.
And unfortunately, she had not gone to iCloud yet, so she actually lost some schoolwork. And I am a little bit more disappointed than she is at her artard of a roommate. And we're not going to name any names, because that's just not how PFP rolls. But I'm trying to figure out a clever and polite and humiliating thing to do to this person. So if I come up with anything, I'm going to... You know, I'll keep you guys posted. I'm usually not the vengeance type, just because I have so much to do. But this like warrants.
Too busy.
Yeah, no, this really warrants some attention, because I mean, you have to understand this was, you know, something that was
not
someone
else's property that you're using, and you know the other person's not in the room or they're not home or whatever. And you know, this is they're basically treating as if they stole it and they're trying to break into it, right?
Totally.
Whereas in actuality, it's just some artard just hanging out at home or whatever.
So it's annoying and too bad, and those people are out there. So the lesson, the moral of this story is, if your iDevice is going to be around retards, please go into the settings and make it so it will not wipe after the X amount of incorrect password attempts. So that way, unless you're confident that your stuff is safely backed up, then by all means, and you know, if your devices are ever in the, you know, unsafe places, unsecure places where it might get stolen, then it's good to have this in place, because that way, whereas your hardware gets jacked, your information is safe. So there's, you know, pros and cons to this feature, and I like it. I actually don't even know if it's turned on my iPhone or not, but I'm pretty good about my hardware, so something to be aware of. If kids, even, you can't blame kids for trying stuff like
this
either.
No, you really couldn't blame kids, although you would think that a kid would go, unsupervised for 3 hours on the lockout period. So that is another problem.
Don't put anything past the little kid. It's just mind-blowing. Like, I thankfully am not gone down that road yet, which is not to say there's anything wrong with kids, but a lot of my friends are doing that these days, and I'm a little bit skeptical of the offspring. But I have seen them in action, and my friend Jared has his oldest, Logan. He will just, like, find something in the room and be like, oh, this is cool. Let's see if I can take it apart. And then it mesmerizes me.
Hey, I did that. I had a
phase
where I took a screwdriver around the house and unscrewed every screw I could fucking see.
It reminds me of when I was a little kid. So I'm like, no shit. So that's why I'm a little bit like, you know, watch what the kids are doing. Not sure. Scheming, plotting.
Yeah.
Which is funny. So good news. So you never stuck that screwdriver in an electrical socket perhaps?
I did. I remember a very vivid memory when I was maybe 5, and I was at the Christmas tree at my grandparents' house, and it was those little green Christmas plugs that come out the top and the bottom, you know, so you can stack them on top of each other, right?
Yeah.
And I was, like, really busy rearranging the way that they were plugged into the socket, and I remember screaming and crying like a little bitch because I shocked myself. So bad.
110 volts is serious whether you're 5 or 50 years old. Don't feel too bad about yourself.
It's a little bit more serious if you're older, or maybe younger. Maybe in the middle you're totally
Maybe if we want to build up your resistance, we'll just waterboard you for a while and see how you do. No, I definitely remember in grade school taking apart a pencil sharpener, a plug-in-the-wall pencil sharpener because it was broken, and whatever teacher I had, they were either fired or oblivious because I was just doing this like in the middle of class, I think, over on
the
side.
And it was still plugged into the wall?
Yeah, fully still plugged into the wall, and I get like halfway tore down, and I shocked the shit out of myself. Thankfully, I didn't scream like a little girl like you did, but it got my attention.
I've got this very small vacuum cleaner that I left around the bunny, and the bunny chewed through a good portion of the cord.
For the first 4 seconds, so, I thought you were talking about your wife. He said the bunny chewed through, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Like,
I thought that was like a nickname or something, a pet name. Hey, bunnykins, don't chew on the cords anymore.
Stop doing that. So as a result, some of the cable is now showing, and so I was running the the vacuum cleaner, and I was really hoping that a portion of the part that was showing wouldn't end up touching the cage. But, you know, eventually it did, and a massive spark and noise just went. Yeah, it was a mess.
So, wait, have you ever shocked yourself, Sam?
Yes.
Okay.
My grandparents' basement had a.
What's
huge,
with grandparents, dude?
I don't know,
and
dude.
The shocking of the
it's
kids.
Just old buildings, you know, it's bound to happen. There's also no grounding. I don't know what exactly it is, but I was down in the basement, and there's just a massive amount of spider webs, and there's all these wires exposed and whatever. And so I got too close to one of the corners, and I guess somehow the spider webness conveyed the electricity. I got too close, and it shocked the fuck out of my whole arm.
I'm pretty sure that. Well, it could have been spider webs. I'm pretty sure you probably just touched it. It might have been.
That's
your
what
perception.
I would think, but I have this memory of not actually feeling the wire at all. So I guess it just electrocuted me so quickly I didn't even notice or something.
Yeah,
but it was obviously a really long time ago. So
yeah,
who's to say in the 80s?
Nice.
Another good one that surprised me. Like, you know, you get shocked enough times and you learn. You're like, okay, that's what electricity is like. I'm going to be careful about it. That's most other dangerous things. One that came out of left field for me was I was on a snow trip. This was probably early to mid-teens. And I found someone had dropped a disposable camera in the snow, and I was stoked. I was like, ooh, free disposable camera. It was a little moist for a disposable. And so I charge it up, I take a picture, it's fine. Charge up again, and like, you know, I'm getting ready to take another picture, and then I get like a fairly serious shock. Like, capacitors are not to be fucked around with. Those
no,
are
serious business.
Serious devices. And this must have been, you know, a camera can't have that big a one in it. I've seen bigger ones and things I've worked
on.
Well,
it's not about the bigger. I mean, the volts are what you feel. The amps are what kill you.
Yeah.
And the size, I mean, it depends. You can, I mean, the size is not a good measure
oh,
of
it's not.
What
okay,
it can
never
hold.
Mind gotcha.
It, I mean, you could manufacture one that are exactly the same size. They'll have completely different properties.
Gotcha.
But, I mean, I think there are stories of kids, like, stopping their hearts because of that. Because
seriously,
you
dude,
can
this
take,
one got me good.
You can take the those cameras apart and then expose the wires and use them to shock your friends, which is totally a bad idea because it really can
Podcast does not recommend or condone disassembling any device with electricity flowing through it, and we would never encourage you to shock anyone else were you to not follow the advice we give you in taking apart things that have electricity flowing through them.
Definitely not. So, good story. So let's back up a little bit. Did we talk actually about the spinny thing?
No.
Okay, so let's talk about the spinny thing, let's talk about iTunes, and let's end the show. How's that sound?
Cool. Do it.
Sounds fantastic. So I was getting all comfortable with my iDevice, and I was like, hey, I've got all these really cool Cydia packages that I'm getting all comfy with, and they're all, you know, nice, and I'm not going to be able to find them later. It's going to piss me off, you know? So I was trying to find ways to back them up. And the only one that I could find that actually backed them up to a local thing, not some weird cloud service or whatever, was Custom Backup. So just do a search for Custom Backup somewhere in Cydia. And so you load it up in Terminal, and you just type Custom Backup and hit Enter. And it backs it up to a location, which it tells you somewhere in the notes there. And it had this really nice little interface that just popped up, and it said, hey, I see this is the first time you're running this program. I have a lot of work to do. Hold on a second and watch the spinny thing while I work. And it had this really nice little, like, you know, pipe forward slash dash backslash pipe, and it just kept
good old fashioned, like, what, MemCheck or one of those did that too, I think. Yep. One of the memory scanners.
MemCheck 86 does that one, and yeah.
So sure enough, it kept doing the spinny thing, and then I hadn't, you know, after it backed it up and then I made a local copy of the Debian packages, I ran it again, like, several months later. And to my surprise, I said, oh, hey, I see you've done this before. Hang on a second. Enjoy the spinny thing while I figure all this out.
Nice.
Give me another spinny thing. And so I want to let everybody know you should probably run that because it's a pretty awesome program.
Very nice.
Don't you just love polite software? I mean, doesn't it make that
it's
much
so
better?
It's so polite.
It just makes it so much better when they're polite. It does. I mean,
it's so self-aware.
I'm looking forward to a future where we have computers that more or less act like the spaceship in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Very
That's
nice.
What I'm looking
cares
forward to.
About your, you know, your comfortability, how comfortable you are, and all that stuff. Yeah.
Well, golly gee, I'd love to help you out with that, but I'm completely out of RAM, and your SSD is about to take a huge shit on you.
That's funny. Hitchhiker's Guide, epic, good book. Definitely. For those of you out there.
Something about iTunes you were going to say?
Oh man. I didn't know this was going to happen, and this is how they get you, obviously, but when I upgraded to iTunes 10, it started to run like I was in the Windows 3.1 days. That's how bad it was.
Oh, God.
And I've got a halfway decent machine here.
How much music do you have?
It's under 100 gigs.
Okay.
And my music, I mean, that's the thing. It's not that I change anything significant with my iTunes. It's just upgrading set this off. So whatever I was running before, version 9 makes sense in a whole counting numbers, integers sort of way, was fine. And then when I went to upgrade to 10 so I could do iOS 5, yippee, ki-yay, motherfucker, iTunes gave me the dirt. They did me the dirty. And now I have this, you know, halfway, I've got a nothing else on my computer runs slow that I notice, and I'm like talking, you know, Adobe CS5 here and everything else that's number crunching madness. So something bad happened, and I went online and I found a post in iTunes support that says, oh yeah, I upgraded to 10 and now my computer runs like complete piece of shit, and 40,000 other people immediately agreed with that and like posted follow-ups. I'm like, oh cool, so it's not just me, this is a problem. And some people did say that backing up and then doing a fresh install of iTunes and then loading from the backup helped. So that's what I'm going to try next, and if it doesn't work, I am going to have some bad noises for iTunes and for iPeople and for
Well, that's the thing about iTunes. I mean, most Apple people love every single piece of Apple like software they ever produced. Mm-hmm. But my roommate is one of those people. He owns stock in Apple. He's like a total, like, not technical person, but he loves his Apple so much, and like, mm-hmm. Apple's the best thing in the world. But he's like, I don't like iTunes. He said it to me today, like about a half an hour before the podcast, right? So
it's,
you know, he was making fun
10.
Of me for using Winamp, and then my other roommate was like, Winamp FTW for the win. And then the Apple guy was like, oh, what's going on?
And what sucks is it's so convenient though when you have it all set up right. It's like, and you know, I was I was like a kid on Christmas when I found out you could do wireless sync with iOS 5 and iTunes 10. It works great too. My shit is backed up to iCloud, and I am a happy little camper. But when I go to actually use iTunes on my computer, a spinny thing happens, more or less, and I get angry because I have lots of RAM, an SSD, a quad core processor, and I sit there and look at the spinny thing, and the anger creeps up inside me.
So bad at spinny things.
Hopefully, my little backup reinstall trick works, and I'll update everyone on that debacle on the next show. So
hopefully,
who knows?
The only technical advice you'll ever get from Apple is to reinstall it or restore.
Yeah, serious. I'm gonna follow their advice and see what happens.
Oh man,
keep us posted.
Keep us posted. Definitely.
Definitely. All right.
Great. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. You should check out the RSS feed. If you go to portforwardpodcast.com, on the right side, there's a little QR code, and if you click that directly, it'll take you to iTunes. And below it, there's a link that says subscribe to podcast via RSS, and that's the RSS feed which you can put in all of your fabulous podcatchers. You can find us on Twitter. I am PortFWDPodcast. Merrick, what's your Twitter handle?
I'm at Fasty4, but I've been so busy I haven't fired up TweetDeck in, like, I don't know, pretty much an eon. So sorry if anybody added me and they're like, wow, Merrick's boring. I am right now, but maybe down the road I will entertain you, so stay tuned anyway.
And Sam?
At Variable Gigahertz, at Variable GHZ.
And you guys can also find us on Google Plus if you just send an email to the show note, to the show address, and say, I want to be your Google Plus buddy, then we'll do that. The address for that is packets@portforwardpodcast.com. We will try and catch you again in 2 weeks if all goes well. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Bye.
Adios.
I know that you're busy tonight, but we should talk about that.
Yes. Dude, my life is retarded busy now.
I don't want to hear about it. I guess maybe if it was Merrick. I mean, Sam, that was telling me that, I would tell him that. I mean, I believe you, Merrick, but Sam, I mean, Jesus Christ. What are you doing all day?
Fuck. How's it work?
He has to keep Bunny from chewing on things.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, dude, I got shit to do, all right? That shit's fucking serious. Telling you that spark was epic. It scared the shit out of the bunny too. It was like, fucked up noise. Oh my god, 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 god. Dude, thanks for calling my service vaporware, by the way. There's nothing like that to get someone motivated to have it not be.
You were productive.
Yeah, dude, it's pretty bad. It's up there with you were productive.
Oh man, right? That's what obviously happened to my service, so that's why I'm egging you on, because I completely stopped even thinking about that stuff. So bad.
No, dude, nobody moves at the speed of Benjamin.
What?
No, dude, nobody moves at the speed of Benjamin. Benjamin.